Well, I hope you guys all got your taxes in. It is April 15th, tax day here in the United States. Good morning and happy Monday to everyone joining us today. We've got a lot of news to talk about here on Pre-Market Prep. We're getting back into earnings season. You had Goldman Sachs, Charles Schwab report earnings this morning. We'll go through those as well as doing a preview of all the companies set to report this week. Some major news out of Russia and the commodity space. We'll talk about that. Aluminum and copper prices moving higher. Just a lot of headlines overall. So let's go ahead, get into it. At 8:35, we will have Paul LaMonica from Barron's joining us. Going to be talking some DJT, some Netflix, and more. You don't want to miss that. Let's go ahead and get it started. Welcome to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
All right, let's go ahead and pull up our trusty Benzinga Pro, take a look at what's going on in the market before we head into the open. The S&P 500 trading up about 0.5%. Your Qs trading up a little bit more than that. Tech looks strong this morning. The DIA up about 0.4%. We'll take a look at, some of the big companies this morning that reported, of course, which we'll get more into, but you have Goldman Sachs trading up almost 4%, kind of bucking the trend of the bank earnings last week, but we saw them sell the rip last week, so we'll see if they end up doing the same this week. Let's go ahead and bring in my man, Dennis. Dennis, how we doing today?
I'm here. I'm rested. How's the weekend?
I wish I could say the same about being rested, but we're good. We're here. That's what matters.
That's what matters. So you had a busy weekend, you're telling me.
Yeah, busy. So I see some people in the chat. Joel will be out today. I see some other people in the chat talking about some Apple. We can talk about the Apple trade as well because we had some follow through on Friday.
Yeah, I think we will talk Apple here. And then they obviously had the news coming out over the weekend from Bloomberg. The iPhone sales were tracking lower than the previous quarter here, and that's why the stock is getting hit. But lots of positive news here. Apple's one of the only stocks that are down because we do have a bounce back Monday here after a pretty weak Friday, nervousness over the war situation. Obviously we had some tensions over in the Middle East, but the market is still rallying off of those tensions. So maybe just start here with the earnings though, because we got the one major reporting here this morning here, AB. It is Goldman Sachs. Give us that report and we'll break down the trading action.
Yeah, of course. So Goldman Sachs came in, the EPS came in at $11.50, beat the $8.60 estimate. So that's a very significant beat there. Sales came in at $14.2 billion against the $12.9 billion. Again, very significant beat as well there. They said the investment banking revenue up a lot, 32%, which I think, you know, you hear stuff like this and you're like, hey, these banks are so big. They do so many different things from just, you know, customer banking, like individual banking at Goldman Sachs to credit cards to this to that. But the one thing about the investment banking revenue being up 32% that I think is significant is it shows more activity going on in the economy. Of course, investment banks are helping smaller companies do mergers and acquisitions. They're helping companies when they want to get bought out and stuff like this. So when you see that activity perk up, it's a good sign, I think, because you saw that, that was really down in the dumps for a while, like private equity, investment banking, all this. And so the fact that it's coming back, I think, shows just a little bit more lively of an economy overall.
And the nice thing is here, because obviously JP Morgan really got hammered on Friday and it did not bounce back at all and closed right on the lows. And again, market effects probably didn't help that. The overall S&P was fairly weak as well. But it's nice to see, you know, a snap back here for the next major that we have report. Obviously, we have a lot more banks going to report here this week. Morgan Stanley, we're going to hear from Tuesday. Bank America, we're going to hear from Tuesday. But Goldman's a big one. They look at it. Now, a lot of times Goldman is notorious for doing the same thing, popping and dropping. But we popped about an hour ago, and we haven't given anything back. So that's the good news here. Bad news is you do have this market that's a little bit nervous now. And I do think we're going to be a market that's more inclined to sell the rip as opposed to buy the dip, especially with the rising tensions in the Middle East. So I'm kind of in this mode where I'm just selling rips. So if I was in Goldman and it gave me this 4% pop, I'd probably take the money and run.
Yeah, and maybe Goldman, you know, has the benefit of coming in second here, right? Like, they didn't report with all the other ones on Friday. They
helps.
Yeah, they closed down.
I think where the bar maybe came down a little bit. They're obviously quite different. JP Morgan is a more traditional bank. Goldman, a lot, like you said, a lot of investment banking, a lot of other stuff, but they overlap so much. I do think JP Morgan did set the bar lower for the rest of them because just hit so hard. And the JP Morgan earnings weren't even that bad. They just hammered it on it. So then you get Goldman coming out, and this Goldman always beats. Like, when does Goldman miss? They never miss. It's just it's a matter of the response. So it's so far so good, a good response. But I've just been burned so bad chasing banks in the past that I'm like, I'm not chasing Goldman. It's up $15.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the Friday sell-off overall, sure. Because you had the bad bank earnings come. Well, not even bad. You had the good bank earnings coming in the morning, the bad reaction to the bank earnings, I should say. I mean, JP Morgan, like you said, got absolutely crushed, traded down about 6.5%. Easy to, you know, point fingers at that and say, okay, well, when you have some of these big banks trading down so much, it's going to be hard for the S&P to catch legs and stuff. But it was really other stuff as well. I mean, you take a look at the Qs closed down 1.6%. It felt like people were kind of selling everything. I mean, Joel likes to talk about it a lot on the show on Friday, the markets tend to either close at the high or low of the week. And it certainly was trending more toward the low. What were you seeing, Dennis, as kind of the major factors in the market driving lower on Friday?
Multiple worries. Obviously, you know, the early start from JP Morgan didn't help, but it was concerns in the Middle East. You know, they were talking about it all day, escalations, the possibilities of Iran obviously escalating and striking, which did happen over the weekend here. I don't know if it's going to be a one and done. Maybe the market's hoping that's the case, but you know, there's probably going to be a response from Israel here. They're kind of saying there's going to be a response. So the market was very nervous on Friday about the war situation. I think the market's still going to remain nervous. That's why I look at this rally here this morning, and I think that's a nice gift. You know, here we are. We have rising tensions. We have a lot of unknowns. We're coming into earnings season, and that could be a catalyst because, you know, obviously the market likes to sometimes run up ahead of earnings on certain stocks. So that's the one positive going for the market here. But technically speaking, we've looked tired for a while. We've wanted an excuse to sell off, and we kind of got that excuse on Friday. So now you get the bounce back. This is a classic snapback rally that is usually sold. That's why I'm not coming in here and just coming in and buying. But, you know, this has been a very choppy market here too. Interesting tweet. I'm just going on a tangent here just for a second. But interesting tweet from, I'm going to grab it, from Heisenberg. A decent follow there on Twitter. Just talking about the last 9 S&P days. April 2nd, we were red. April 3rd, we were green. April 4th, we were red. April 5th, we were green. It went red, green, red, green, red, green, red, green, red, green for 9 consecutive days. So we closed red. That would mean today we should close green if that pattern continues to hold. I mean, I'm all about patterns. You find these little, you know, things happening. All that's telling you is that we're in a contrarian market right now. You know, you're fading moves. That's how you're making money, not chasing and getting in the momentum trade, because momentum, you know, seems to go away very quickly here in this market. So that's a good indicator of where we are right now. Chasing moves, not working, really in both directions.
Yeah, and I mean, so you mentioned, obviously, you know, this the news over the weekend, the big news, the escalation in the Middle East. I honestly haven't, like, looked into it too much. Obviously, you had Iran coming in, drone attacks on Israel. Like you said, there most likely, almost certainly will be a response from Israel, and that should, you know, continue to escalate. I've got the S&P 500 chart pulled up here, going back to February 2022. And right here in January 2022, you had all this fear about, you know, before Russia invaded Ukraine, there were a lot of signs that this was going to happen. Russia was kind of strategically placing troops in certain areas, making movements. And you had a lot of people that were like, yeah, they're doing this for show. They're not, you know, they're not actually going to do it. They know that, you know, there's going to be a big response from the U.S. and other countries, Western countries, if they do it. you know, and so there, it wasn't a certainty, but it certainly looked like it was moving that direction.
Sure.
And that fear was helping bring markets lower, among other things. Obviously, we were still worrying about inflation and stuff, but the S&P 500 in the first month of the year, January 2022, went from about 500 all-time highs, dropped all the way down to like 420. But then this day right here, this day over here, Thursday, February 24th, this was the day that Russia actually invaded Ukraine, and the market actually like short-term bottomed and then ripped from there. And part of it, I think, was because it was less uncertainty. We knew what was going on at that point, you know, like we knew Russia was invading Ukraine, and a lot of people, I mean, I don't remember if it was Dietrich or other people on Twitter, were sharing stats of like wartime markets, and they're actually pretty good, unfortunately, for whatever reason that is. So I think the uncertainty is a bad thing, but once we know a little bit more what's going on, I don't know if that's going to mean like, okay, sell everything, or if it's going to maybe create a buying opportunity.
The market always likes certainty, and it's a fantastic point you're making here. And in wartime, sometimes the market can go higher. I mean, think back to, you know, how did we get out of the Great Depression? It was really World War II that brought the markets out of that. So, because obviously, you know, you had everybody working, you know, to support the fight.
We're going way back here this morning.
Way back. We're going way back here. But it's not always a guarantee that markets sell off during wartime. And that's the point you're making. And I'm with you on that. I think the certainty thing you bring up is an excellent point here as well. The markets like certainty. They want to know the path of interest rate cuts. They want to know, you know, what's these escalations happening here? You know, what does this mean for the U.S.? You know, how much involvement is the U.S. going to have over in the Israel-Iran situation? I mean, the market likes all that certainty. So that's, you know, a consideration. But what's interesting here is we actually get, you know, Iran doing an attack and you end up seeing oil sell off. You know, like I don't think anybody probably had that there in their playbook. But what probably happens is you got a crowded trade over the weekend here where everybody's piling into oil saying, yeah, we're going to war here. We're going to, you know, jump in, you know, oil trade. It's going to be up huge on Monday. And you get the exact opposite. You get an S&P rally and you get an oil sell off. And that's just what the market does. It punishes the maximum amount of participants. A lot of people positioned for war. And obviously, you know, that's maybe, you know, going to be the case. But just because everybody's positioned that way, the market sometimes goes the other way. Then there's shakeouts. So oil selling off here this morning.
Yeah, that will be an interesting story to watch again with oil. All these countries, you know, the OPEC, Middle Eastern countries. I mean, if the things continue to escalate, it will be, you know, exciting, I guess, like interesting to see what happens with the oil prices. But like you said, like it might just be a little bit too crowded right now to just go long oil, especially when we were already hitting highs after like
the oil trade was really back early in the year when everybody wasn't interested in it. We've talked about having value in there. You know, Warren Buffett was loading up again on his Oxy at $57, $58, $59. It's proven to be correct. Once again, the Oracle of Omaha is correct. Stock's up at $69 here now. I don't know if he's obviously long-term, so we haven't seen him sell any. And we will see him sell because he's over a 10% shareholder. So we'll know within 48 hours if he starts to sell. He hasn't sold any yet. He's not a day trader. He's in it for the long-term. But I mean, that whole Oracle area or Oracle of Omaha area and OXY 56, 57, 58, which we played multiple times back in 2023, it still worked again in 2024. So oil has come back a long ways. Do you want to chase it here, though? Like sometimes, you know, this could be the topping situation. You get the actual war. You think now oil's really going to go. Everybody piles in and it does the exact opposite.
Yeah, and I think there's, you know, but hopefully still room for there to be some form of like de-escalation or something, or maybe not even de-escalation right now, but at least like not as much escalation as people are anticipating. I mean, there's obviously been a lot of pain in the region the past 6 months or so since October. And I think a lot of people on both sides are, you know, kind of ready to find some sort of diplomatic situation. I don't know. That might be harder to do once we get whatever response we will see. Let's just take a look at some of the defense stocks here in the U.S. You've got Lockheed Martin trading it up a little bit less than 2%, $8 this morning.
It caught an upgrade too. So you got Lockheed Martin. A lot of that is the upgrade this morning. Just seeing who upgraded it. It was, you have it in front of you? JP Morgan Upgrades Lockheed Martin to overweight raise their price target to $518. It's the war stock that everybody thinks about immediately. You know, it's probably going to be up over the weekend just because of the escalations here. Even without the upgrade, General Dynamics is trading higher, and NOC. Those are your three war stocks you think about. All those stocks are trading higher here this morning. Lockheed Martin trading up more, though, because of the upgrade.
Yeah, then, of course, RTX this morning up about a percent, formerly Raytheon. I mean, wow, look at this chart. I haven't even looked at this chart in a while. I mean, it sometimes things are so obvious in hindsight. If you just would have bought right here on Monday, October 9th, right after the over the weekend of the October 7th, attack in Israel. I mean, the stock went from $70 to $100 in 6 months. So up about 30%, or up more than 30% in 3 months there. So, look, you're coming up right at here where it looks like there is a lot of potential resistance. Kind of this $100 mark seems like a big deal for RTX here. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'd necessarily be going out and buying this just based on the news over the weekend. Again, I mean, you've had a lot of this stuff already been going on over the last 6 months, but certainly there will be more attention this week on these different stocks.
I'm more looking in my longer term stuff here, where to raise some cash, to be honest here. I'm not looking at this market and thinking, what am I going to buy? We're on for the next 30% run. We've had our bull market, folks. You know, the S&P's ride 30% in 5-6 months. It needs a pause. It needs a cool off period here. I don't think there's any reason to chase up moves here. I don't think I'm scrambling to get into stocks. You know, certain areas, sure, you know, maybe in your long term, you know, you can look at certain pockets. There's always something to buy. But overall here, my mindset isn't, ooh, I'm going to make a lot of money in my long term portfolio in the next few months. My mindset's more, how do I keep the money that I just made in the long term portfolio over the last 4 months? Because it's really been a pretty good run. You know, S&P is, like we said, up significantly here. A lot of stocks that we call that NASA acronym, absolutely incredible performance in the first quarter. I think it's just time for the market to pause. And maybe too many people are expecting it. Maybe it's just going to be the same. Maybe we're just going to go up to new all-time highs. But right now, the market looks tired. You know, IWM is now under $200 here again. Trying to rally here this morning, not participating nearly as much once again. I mean, this is like the story here, IWM underperformance. Even today, you know, the S&Ps are up 0.59%, IWM's up 0.26%, not keeping up. The higher beta of these names usually means it should be up more, but it's not. And it's just this trade that small caps are obviously, you know, we've got interest rate concerns, but we have other concerns here as well going. Coming into earnings season, we'll see how they go. But I think we're just due for a pause.
Yeah, and I think, like, I mean, you mentioned it earlier, talking about how the market tends to punish the maximum participant trades. And I think with just how much stuff I saw on Twitter and stuff over the weekend of, oh my God, it's World War III, sell everything, you know, you got to buy that. And then you wake up on Monday, you look at the markets, and the S&P 500 is trading up like 0.5%. It's like, okay, yeah, this is, you know, I mean, it's crazy how often that seems to work. And there's rarely ever a trade. I mean, you go back to 2021, when I guess people could just pile into anything and, oh, you just buy Tesla every day and it was going up 5% or whatever it was, ARKK. And like, those were pretty crowded trades that worked out for a while until they didn't. So, you know, I remember when I was reading about it over the weekend and again on Twitter and stuff, I was like, okay, well, we'll see. I mean, I'm not, once I saw so many people call in for a huge market crash is when I was like, I don't think the market's going to crash at all. But to your point, maybe we don't crash, or maybe we don't rally from here. Maybe it's just some consolidation for a little bit.
Well, that can be too. You know, markets can correct in two ways. They can correct by actually going down, or they correct just by going sideways for a bit, like the NVIDIA move that we had back in the summertime when we went sideways. We were doing 400 and 500 for the better part of 5 months. That was a corrective period where we were letting the stock performance, the company's performance, catch up with the stock performance here. And then, you know, obviously, we took the next leg higher. So it doesn't necessarily mean we have to go down. I'm not like liquidating my portfolio and thinking the next big crash is coming. Multiple people, like on Twitter over the weekend, were like, sell it all now because this is the end. You know, we've seen how that story ends, and it usually ends poorly for the bears. That's why I always stay invested in my long-term portfolio. I just raise cash when I'm concerned, but I'm never going short, or I'm never going completely to cash, because over the long term, you want to stay invested in the markets.
Got it. So, Dennis, let's we'll move on here. Some other top headlines. What were you doing in 1987?
Oh gosh, 1987. I'd be about 11 years old. Probably watching the Oilers win the Stanley Cup. That was those good
years. That the last year the Oilers won the Stanley Cup?
1990.
Okay.
So they won
in
87, 88, and 90.
I didn't know. Were the Oilers one of the original six?
No, they didn't come until 1979.
Oh, I guess it makes sense because the Oilers.
The expansion. Yeah.
But there were a couple Canadian. I think the Maple Leafs were in the original six. I don't know. Someone was asking.
Oh, yeah. The original six was Leafs, Boston, Montreal, Rangers,
Blackhawks,
Chicago. Who are we forgetting? Chad, help us out here.
I should just Bruins, maybe? Off.
Yeah, the Bruins. You got it. That's your original six.
The reason I ask is because Aluminum posted its biggest intraday gain since at least 1987. And nickel and copper prices also rose after the UK and US introduced sanctions that in effect banned the trading of new Russian supplies of the vital industrial metals of two of the world's largest exchanges. So again, you got the US and the UK coming together saying, hey, let's sanction Russia on these aluminum, nickel and copper supplies. We'll take a look at some of the stocks trading higher on that this morning. Southern Copper, which has been on just an absolute tear, if you look at this chart, up to $120, trading up another $2 this morning on the news. Alcoa also trading higher, up more than 4% this morning for Alcoa, which that chart doesn't look as good as Southern Copper's, although it does look like, you know, we hit a short-term bottom here, and then now we broke out above this level, and then you got this news catalyst. So Alcoa could be one to watch here going over the fundamentals. It's only a $6 billion company, but, you know, pretty cheap.
It's been a laggard. I've bought Alcoa in the long-term portfolio at 32 just about a month ago. It's been a good one. Key reversal day on Friday spooks you, and now you get the snapback rally. It might be an opportunity just to sell into this, to be honest. But, you know, we'll see how it responds. A nice early market move. A little bit concerned, though, about the key reversal that we had from the technicals on Friday. So snapback on the news. Sometimes people use that as a selling opportunity.
Oh, Dennis, we screwed up. You already said Boston, you said Bruins, and then I said Boston. We didn't say the Red Wings. All the teams.
Well, who did we miss? Who did I? Did I have somebody in there that wasn't? I thought we went through them.
The Red Wings.
Yeah, obviously the Wings. Wings, Bruins, Leafs. Okay,
so did we say
Blackhawks?
Chat was saying we missed the Red Wings the first time, which that'd
Rangers.
Be a bad one for us to miss.
There's six. There's the six.
Okay.
Maybe I made one up. Did we not say the Wings?
I don't think so.
Wings fighting for their playoff. That's pretty terrible that we did that.
Oh, yeah, they beat Toronto and they needed to win.
They did. And they play Montreal twice. So they play Montreal, I believe it's tonight. And then they play Montreal again. They need to win them both. Winning one is not enough for the Wings. I know you guys hate the sports talk, but winning one is not enough for the Wings because they're chasing the Flyers in Washington. The Flyers in Washington play each other. So there's a guaranteed win there.
Okay.
So that's why you can look at the standings and say, well, if they win, the other team lose. But because the Flyers play against Washington, one of those teams have to win.
Interesting.
So that's why the Wings have to at least get 3 points, but really they need to win them both.
Got it. Yeah, because then if the Flyers in Washington go to OT and one team gets 3 points and the other gets a
point. It's a worst case scenario. They definitely don't want that.
No, we definitely don't want OT. Definitely don't want OT in that game. So are you, and we'll move on from sports after this. So obviously you're an Oilers fan, but do you have secondary allegiance to the Red Wings? Do you root for them?
No, sorry. Never did. I'm Oilers and that's all it's all about. But I find the run interesting. And the Wings haven't made it for so long. I think it'd be exciting to have them in the playoffs, so I'm cheering for the Wings to make it. Obviously, it's going to be challenging, though, with trying to catch too many teams. The Islanders look like they're in, so it's basically four teams for the last spot. Washington has the path there because they've got the tiebreaker, and I believe they're obviously it's who they're playing as well. So I think Washington's probably the favorite at this point in time, but Pittsburgh's still in it. The Flyers are just clinging because they only have one game left, so the Flyers are likely out. It looks like it's, to me, probably going to be Washington, but Detroit, if they win them both, has a chance.
Well, it'll be fun. Fun to watch those last two games if you're here in Detroit. You know, we got a lot going on right now. Red Wings trying to make the playoffs, the NFL draft coming here next week. Yeah. It's a busy, busy time of the year for Detroit. Your Tigers playing again. So, all right, Yeshiva saying stop talking about sports.
Fine. They hate the sports.
We'll go to we'll stay on the commodity talk for a second. Let's go to gold for a second, Dennis, because gold, I mean, you know, we've been talking about it, hit new all-time highs, been rallying. Do you think this extra, you know, tension in the Middle East, some maybe market uncertainty could help gold rally even further from here?
Yeah, market uncertainty can help. Again, I don't like the candle on Friday, and this is why I'm nervous about this rally here today, and so I'm going to probably be a broken record on this show here today, but it feels like we should be selling stocks into this rally because the technicals look like crap on Friday. You get the snapback because World War III didn't start over the weekend here, and even despite the tensions escalating in the Middle East, but gold had an ugly day on Friday. I mean, it closed strong, or it opened very strong and closed very weak. That's exactly what you don't want to see, closing near the lows. So I think you get a little snapback, pop back up. I think you have some people caught from Friday and saying, oh, thank you for giving me my money back. So I'm selling gold in this rally here this morning as well. And I'm not talking long-term. This is trading stance here. You know, gold, you want to hold, you want to be a gold bug, hold gold in your long-term portfolio forever. I never did because gold, honestly, and I know in the last few years, it's been a pretty good asset here. But over, you know, the last 30 years, gold really hasn't been that great. It's underperformed dramatically here. I mean, if we just look at where the GLD pricing was, you know, we go back to 1980, gold was at what, $1,000 an ounce in like 1985 or something like that. What's the history of gold? I'm going to bring up the long-term chart.
Yeah, I'm not sure because I don't have the actual commodity.
Yeah, gold price. I think gold price 1980. I think I had $1,000 an ounce 1980. Now $614. So $614 in 1980. But if you think about that, now what are we? 2000. So I mean, you're talking about 44 years. The thing has tripled. The markets are up. You know, the S&P back then, or even the Dow, was 1,000. Now we're 30,000. So I mean, gold over the long term, sorry folks, has been absolutely an underperforming asset here in the last 40 years.
Yeah, and I think most people that do buy gold or love gold, they're doing it not because they think it'll necessarily outperform the market. They just think it's safer. But I think if you're buying the overall market, S&P 500, SPY, VU, just putting it in your portfolio, I mean, the stocks are inherently, you know, speculative assets. There's risk tied to them. There always will be. But at the end of the day, like, you know, you're exposed to big downturns and or down, you know, downtrends in the short term. But I think over time, like owning the S&P 500 has proven to be a pretty safe asset class overall. And I mean, gold, like, didn't gold dipped when we got COVID too? It's not like gold, you know, probably less, you know, than other stuff, but it dipped too. I mean, you can see the crash right here. It went from
everybody thinks there's this negative correlation, and in a lot of cases, it isn't. A lot of cases, it's just kind of no correlation. It kind of does its own thing. So it's not necessary that the market goes down and gold always goes up. It's not the case, AB. So you're correct. And I mean, lately, it's kind of been that way too. The markets have had a pretty good year. You know, gold has had a pretty good year too. So thinking this is just an asset that's going to outperform and the times get tough sometimes works, but sometimes it just does its own thing.
Yeah. And again, you know, talking about that Max Payne trade, I mean, like now that gold is rallying into all time highs, you got more people looking up. How do I buy gold? How do I buy gold? I want to get it on the, I see the news articles about saying that gold's at all time highs. I want to buy it now. And then it's like, okay, well now that everyone's talking about it, I feel like maybe, you know, the juice has been squeezed to say, and I don't know. I mean, I've just have never really been interested in buying gold. I'd rather own stocks, but hey, if you've been holding gold, been a pretty good few months for you. What about digital gold, Dennis? Bitcoin, big dip.
I'm a hodler. I remain a hodler.
Well, I know you're a hodler. I know you're a hodler. But what's going on? We were at 70,000. We dipped below. Let me pull up like an hourly chart on here.
Same thing as the Qs. You know, the Bitcoin is just basically a stock. It's basically a tech stock, really. It's trading with the Qs. It's been trading with the Qs for years. You know, you put those charts on top of each other. NASDAQ gets hammered. NASDAQ comes back. It's basically trades. Like you can say, oh, it's its own thing and not correlated to the markets whatsoever. It's not true in the last few years. The speculative technology trader owns Bitcoin. So they're all kind of tied together. Qs start to tire out. Bitcoin's tiring out a little bit here. Does it mean the Bitcoin run is over? Does it mean the story is over? I hope not. I'm still long Bitcoin. I did sell a little bit. So it had just grown so much. It started as like 1% of my long-term portfolio and almost grew to 5% just because it went up so much there. And I had bought more too, so it's not entirely true. I bought and then I bought again, right before this big run. So I brought it back down to like, I don't know, like 3% of the long-term portfolio. So it's a piece. You know, I'm not like a 30% or 50% or Jeremy Newsom has said before, he's significantly higher in Bitcoin. Like the majority of his money is in Bitcoin. I've never been, oh, we got some news here happening, guys. We got some movement.
In the overall market?
Yeah. Yeah, we just went down here. You know how I know? Bot.
we
just sold off just a little bit here. Empire State Manufacturing Index is breaking here right now, and retail sales also.
Yeah,
here,
I got retail sales coming in at 0.7 versus 0.4% estimate. So that beat estimates, but it was 0.9% prior, so down month over month. Core retail sales came in at 1.1% versus 0.5% expected. So that's hot, which is, you know, okay, good news that people are spending money, but maybe bad news for inflation. The Empire State Manufacturing Index came in at negative 14.3 versus negative 5.2 estimates, negative 20 prior. So, you know, I wish I knew exactly what that meant, the Empire State Manufacturing. I mean, that's just when they ask basically businesses, are they, you know, manufacturing, right? Like what's going on there? I don't know exactly, I guess, what that number means. I think the retail sales coming in hot again shows
this is the inflation concerns again, the market coming in and saying, well, you know, retail hot, you know, what does that mean? What does that mean for the Fed if the numbers are coming in hot again here? So that's where we're at, folks. That's where we continue to remain, as this market is more concerned about the path of the Fed than it is the path of the war. So you get a little bit hot number, it's like, uh-oh, that means the Fed may not be lowering as quickly as we would like. So we're right back to the story is the same. The story remains the same. It's all about interest rates.
Yeah,
at least for the IWM, which is getting hit here right now. So the reason maybe the IWM was underperforming here this morning, they kind of knew.
Yeah, and I mean, going back to, you know, obviously the big headline from over the weekend and the fears about escalation in the Middle East and all this. I mean, at some point, which I don't think really, at least right now, like, you know, I mean, we'll see what happens. The U.S. may or may not get more involved than it had been. I'm not really that worried about it now. But at the end of the day, the more you have this uncertainty and wars and stuff going on around the world, probably makes the Fed a little bit less likely to raise interest rates. But then when you get, you know, more data that's showing that, okay, inflation could still be sticky or even on the rise, that makes it more likely the Fed raises interest rates. So at the end of the day, like you said, Dennis, we're still talking about, you know, like World War III headlines aside, we're still talking about the same thing we've been talking about the past few months. And that's rates. About what the Fed is going to do with interest rates. And it's all, you know, kind of interconnected, because like I said, the more you have global uncertainty, the less likely the Fed is to raise rates. And even when going back to when we were talking about how the market responded to Russia and Ukraine, that was part of it, was that the Fed wasn't going to be able to raise as much if you have, you know, essentially a new war starting and all this. But again, I don't think we're really at that much risk, knock on wood, of there being a lot of like direct American boots on the ground involvement right now. I mean, we'll see. What happens?
I don't think it's boots on the ground. I think it's lending support.
I don't think anybody in the U.S.
is going to applaud and, you know, that we're going to go put boots on the ground over here. Maybe it's going to come to that. You know, I don't know if that's the case. We don't know what the administration is thinking here, but I think we're just as a support right now is what I really see happening here. So I don't think this is turning into World War III, at least not yet. Market bought that dip, AB, again. You know, we saw the significant dip here. S&P's dropped about 10 handles on it, bought it right straight back up. So buy the dip mentality still, you know, emerging here, you know, even despite, you know, like, you know, you get a little bit of hot data here. You think, uh-oh, here we go again. Well, you know what? IWM had a significant fall off. IWM, you can see it more pronounced, was down, lost about 50, 60, well, even more than that.
IWM. On a 5-minute candle, you got all the way down to 198, basically flat, and then popped back up a buck in that 5 minutes. So,
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe the algos, maybe the traders just taking a few seconds to digest this data. Again, the retail sales for March came in hot, which, you know, again, like it's kind of all conflicting in a sense, because you've got data that shows that the economy is still doing well. And that's what Ryan Dietrich was talking about last week when he joined us, was basically that, like, hey, like, you know, we're not expecting 3 rate cuts anymore. We're only expecting 2. But we don't think that's necessarily a bad thing as long as it's predicated on the fact that the reason you're not cutting rates three times is because the economy is hot. Like, people want to always talk about we're not cutting as a bad thing. But if the reason you're not cutting is because the economy is doing well, then typically stocks tend to do well in the times that the economy is doing well too. It's not always 100% correlated, or, you know, the market's not the economy and the economy is not the market, but typically, you know, most of the time when the economy is doing really well, stocks tend to do pretty good as well.
Okay, let's move. We got guests in the background here. Paul is waiting here. We're going to get Paul and Monica, bring them into this conversation.
Let's do it. Paul and Monica from Barron's hanging out backstage. Let's give them our special pre-market prep guest welcome. All right, Paul and Monica from Barron's. Paul, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good, thanks. Love the music.
Oh, I appreciate it. We got to try to get hyped up on a Monday morning. You know, some of us are still a little, you know, it's been a long weekend, and we, for some reason here in the Benzinga office, there's no coffee. So I got to do what we can. Paul, so for those that don't know you already or have read your articles in Barron's, what do you cover? What's your like expertise?
Yeah, so I'm covering the broader markets, a lot of stocks that are in the news. Had a recent piece on Netflix previewing their earnings coming up later this week. There's been a lot of stories that I and Barron's colleagues have done about DJT after the merger with DWAC went into effect. Of course, that's a story that cuts right to the intersection of politics in the markets. So, yeah, I mean, I will continue to be following, you know, large cap companies in the news and broader market trends.
Well, let's go ahead then. I mean, you know, you mentioned Netflix and DJT. Obviously, DJT has been one of the biggest stories in the market over the past month or so, I'd say. I mean, you had the long-awaited merger with Truth Social and DWAC, officially the ticker change and everything. Stock rallied, and then it rallied until it didn't, and we're trading down another 15% this morning. I mean, everyone knew, I guess, the stock was trading, you know, divorced from its fundamentals, nowhere near, you know, I mean, the company was doing like, what, $10 million of revenue in a year with $50 million? Not even $10 million of revenue with $50 million of losses and trading at like a $10 billion valuation. So there was no real question about that. The question was just how long would this trade so divorced from those fundamentals? And it seemed to happen pretty quickly, this sell-off. I mean, from $80 down to $27, now down another $5 this morning, 15%. Like, do you think the story's over here?
I'm not so sure I'd say it's over just yet. And obviously, I mean, well, that cuts two ways. I mean, the story may not be over because there could be further downside, or the story may not be over because it could wind up having a rebound depending on whether or not there are promotional posts from the former president over on Truth Social. You know, will his followers start buying the stock again? I do find it fascinating that, you know, we know that Donald Trump owns about 57-58% of the stock. There's not a lot of available shares out there, which makes it difficult and expensive to short. So I'm not 100% sure that there are big institutional firms and hedge funds maybe necessarily shorting this stock. This just could simply be a case where investors recognize that if they got in at a much lower price, you know, it skyrocketed to these unreasonable valuations. Why not take some money off the table? And then it just started to feed on itself. And it's been this downhill slide ever since. Because as you pointed out, I mean, there really isn't a fundamental reason to necessarily buy this stock. I mean, let's be honest, they're not the next Meta. They're not the next Snapchat. They're not X. And I think X in some respects is a problem for this company, because before the Elon Musk takeover of Twitter, what is now X, you know, you didn't really have, a lot of people thought you didn't really have voices on the right on social media being able to have their message amplified. You look at X now, and it's not exactly all that difficult to find people that are pro-Trump, anti-Biden, leaning to the right. So it just makes the case for Truth Social as a company maybe less compelling, and then hence DJT stock not really all that interesting.
Paul, to your point, I was tracking this as well, just at Interactive Brokers, that give me the current lending rate, and it's moving all the time. This was once 790% to short it. It's down to only 124% a year. So the borrow is becoming easier here now. Maybe that, can lend some support to the stock. But to your point here, there's just no fundamentals whatsoever to value this thing on. So this is trading on story and that's it. And unfortunately, the story has cooled off substantially from where it was a couple of weeks ago. Does this remind you of like something like the GameStop, AMC stuff that we saw back to 2020? Because obviously we saw these companies, move away from their fundamentals for a very long time. Obviously, eventually AMC did reconnect. Some people are arguing GME is still not trading with its fundamentals here. Does it remind you of like the whole meme stock? And you think there's a little bit of that aspect to it as well?
Yeah, I think there is a certain element of meme mania to DJT, but what makes it even more of a unique situation is because you throw in the political angle as well. I mean, the only reason I think that this stock is interesting to a certain subset of traders is because of the Trump presence. I mean, this, if you had this company set up as an alt-right, alternative social media outlet that had nothing to do with Trump, I don't think we would be talking about it. It wouldn't be a company that probably would have went and merged with a SPAC to go public. So I think that there is some meme aspect to it, but also to be fair to GameStop and AMC, those two companies, to me, the question always was they were just ridiculously overvalued, but they were recognizable and still are viable businesses. We're not necessarily talking about a company with fundamentals that are so poor that you have to wonder why they're publicly traded companies. I mean, yes, both of them have had issues with profitability, and I think that's going to remain a challenge going forward. But their revenue base is in the multi-billions of dollars, not single-digit millions. You can understand that GameStop and AMC, if you do the buy what you know sort of random walk down Wall Street sort of mentality, people understand what GameStop and AMC do. They're probably customers of those companies. True. They've been to a GameStop. They've seen a movie at AMC. These are legitimate businesses. This is not to say that Truth Social isn't legitimate, but it's just tiny.
Yeah, I mean, well, Paul, first of all, you just became probably a lot of people's, a lot of Reddit boards and message boards' favorite person of the day by saying that AMC and GameStop are viable businesses, which, I mean, like you said, and that was probably a big part of it with GameStop specifically was like the perfect age range of people that were buying the stock were the same people that like grew up going to GameStop and loving it and having this affinity for the company. And so they wanted to buy the stock. They wanted to try to save the company. With DJT, like you said, you have this certain subset of traders who maybe they're big Trump fans and they like Trump and they want to buy the stock to support him or whatever. But like at a certain point, people care about their money maybe more than a lot of other things. So if you're losing money on it, maybe some of these political affiliations and this and that kind of go out the window because, people only got so much money to buy. So if you were buying it at, $80 or whatever it got up to and it's at 27 today, you might be like, okay, well, I'll find a different way to support Trump. Maybe I'll just donate directly to his campaign instead of buying this stock. But I do want to make sure we have time to talk about some other stuff as well. Netflix set to report on Thursday. Obviously, it's stock's been rallying, been doing really well, really for the past like year or so, longer than that. What are you thinking about Netflix heading into this report?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think that Netflix has done a good job of capitalizing on some of this, the disruption that's going on in streaming. You do have a lot of the major media companies, pulling back a little bit, recognizing that maybe they threw too much money at streaming and spent too much money on content and have to cut back a tiny bit. Apple and Amazon are obviously still tough competitors for Netflix as well as the legacy media firms. But I think two things that I pointed out in the story that I think, you know, Netflix has done that have probably really helped them is, remember, there was a time when Netflix was all about how you don't have to see any ads with Netflix. We are not going to have ads. And then they changed their tune and found that there is a pretty significant number of people that hadn't subscribed to Netflix before that are happy to pay for a lower price tier that does have some ads. I mean, let's be honest, we're all used to ads at this point, even if we don't like them. And I think also that Netflix has recognized that, particularly in light of the Hollywood actor and writer strike last year, that making some bets, more bets on reality sort of TV, live and scripted, not scripted, but you know, live and shows like Drive to Survive and Quarterback, these reality shows that are particularly tied to sports, are a good move for Netflix as well. So you have all of those programs that are very popular, and now they're going to have Raw next year, a WWE flagship show that's going to stream live on Netflix. You have the Mike Tyson Jake Paul fight coming up later this summer. A lot of buzz about that. I know my kids want to watch it. I grew up watching Mike Tyson. I think they know who Mike Tyson is, but they obviously know who Jake Paul is.
You grew up watching Mike Tyson. Your kids grew up watching Jake Paul, so they get both generations there. Dennis,
exactly.
Yeah. Do you think there's a possibility? You know, obviously Netflix is, you know, just kind of touching into the sports aspect of it here. Do you think there's a possibility they go after like a big contract, like reach out, you know, to NFL rights or something like that? Do you think there's a possibility that they could go that way? Because I've argued for a long time. I have traditional cable because I'm a huge sports fan. And I can't watch sports on Netflix, and and obviously there's different ways that people go about it, Fubo, whatever it is. But, you know, I've always just been like, the reason I don't cut the cord, people say, why do you still have cable? It's because I like watching a lot of sports, and I like watching, you know, and then the streaming is a little bit delayed as well, which I don't love either. Do you think there's a possibility Netflix eventually goes like after the NFL or something like that?
I wouldn't rule it out. I mean, I'd have to double check what the current contracts are. It does seem that for the time being, you've got the ABC, ESPN, and CBS and Fox having their contracts running for a little while longer. Amazon obviously has thrown its hat into the ring with some of the streaming games. I think the NFL is still going to be a little wary of going all in on streaming. I think that, you know, they recognize that having what you just pointed out, a lot of people will still have a regular cable monthly plan or even just rabbit ears to watch live sports on these broadcast networks. So you see a lot of times on social media, anytime something goes from a regular network to an Apple or an Amazon, people complain about it because not everyone wants to subscribe to, you know, a dozen streaming services in addition to a monthly cable bill. But, you know, generationally, you know, we obviously are moving more to streaming. Younger customers, younger users are really comfortable with all these platforms. So down the road, I wouldn't be surprised if Netflix made a play, but I don't think it's imminent.
Paul, we talk about, you know, the FOMO trade a lot, the fear of missing out. You know, people see something, you know, they're not in, they want to go and buy it, and it then pushes it higher, and then it gets more people saying, oh, I wish I was in that, and then it pushes it higher. So we know what FOMO is. What is OMO?
Yeah, this story I wrote for Barron's got a gift from, so to speak, from a source. She talked about, a money manager talking about how she's okay missing out. Stocks have had a nice run already this year on top of last year. We've had volatility that's continuing, particularly in light of the events in the Middle East. So that could go on for a little while longer. We're waiting to see whether or not earnings for the first quarter and what the outlooks are going to be. So she's okay taking some money off the table and missing out on a little bit more upside because, you know, she's a little worried that valuations are stretched and there are concerns about, you know, as you guys pointed out earlier in the show, rate cuts may not come until later this year or even not until 2025. And I agree that the reason that's happening is because of the good news in the economy. We saw those retail sales numbers that just came out a few minutes ago. But I think there is still a certain element of traders on Wall Street that are just conditioned to want rate cuts and want them now. So even if the Fed winds up on an extended pause because the economy is still in good shape, that could create some more volatility and possibly some downside for the markets. Higher rates for longer also could dent interest rate sensitive companies and hurt earnings as well.
Got it. Well, Paul, is there anything we haven't gotten to that you would like to discuss this morning before we let you go and get on with your busy Monday?
Thank you. No, I think we covered a lot of ground. So it was a lot of fun. Happy to do it again. Really appreciate it.
There you go. Well, Paul LaMonica again from Barron's. It was fun having you on. We got to have you on again soon. Anytime you got a big, you know, report coming out in Barron's or anything, feel free to send our way and maybe we'll discuss it on the show. Paul, thank you again.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, guys, that was Paul LaMonica from Barron's. Fun to talk some DJT, some Netflix, and some OMO. Okay, missing out. Dennis, are you okay missing out?
No, not really. I actually have FOMO. I get the FOMO going all the time. So it's hard. It's natural just to have the FOMO. And I see something going up. It's like, why wasn't in that? I have it so bad sometimes. I look after hours and like something's moving. And I'm like, there's a million things moving all the time. I'm mad that I didn't get them all.
But you just said you were going cash.
Yeah, I don't want to miss out on the fall. No, I'm not going.
You
cash.
Do want,
I haven't. I'm said I'm talking about raising some cash, but I really haven't sold too much. You know, I did ring. We know on my NASA trade, I rang the register on the SMCI, rang the register on half the Nvidia, I rang the register on half the AMD, but then I re-entered my other half of the AMD right around in these 160s here. So I'm kind of back in on the AMD again. This is longer term stuff. I know the technicals aren't looking that great on it. It markets are tough, you know, like it depends, you know, it's obviously you got to be somewhat, you know, of a half glass full guy than opposed to a half glass empty, because if you're always a half glass empty guy, you're always going to look at the stock trend saying, you know, even when you have the winner, you're like, why didn't I buy more? You know, so you're looking at, you know, you had a good trade here and now you're still glass half empty because I wish I would have bought more. Or, you know, when the stock goes down, it's like, why did I buy so much? You know, so it's tough. Markets, you know, play with your, it's a psychological game. And that's why I've always said, like, trading, you know, on paper is just kind of useless at this point in time because there's so much psychology that goes on when your real money's in there. Paper trading worked well when, you know, you had brokers that were charging $100 commissions or even, you know, $8, $10 a trade. But with free trading, there's absolutely no reason to paper trade anymore.
Yeah, I agree.
Get in there. Get in there. Even with $100, get in there.
Yeah, get in there with some money that you can
real
afford.
Real money. So you're feeling all that psychological because the markets are such a psychological head game more than anything.
All right, let's get to some headlines that we've maybe, you know, we haven't talked about yet. So we have Tesla, which 53 minutes into the show, our first time mentioning Tesla today. That's pretty good, Dennis.
Apple, too. We mentioned off the bat, but we didn't talk that news either. So I think we should cover Tesla and Apple.
Let's do it. Two of the biggest tech companies in the country. Tesla shares are trading lower on reports indicating the company will lay off over 10% of its workforce. You know, never a great sign when a company's laying off that many people, although recent history shows us the markets have you know, rewarded some companies that have done layoffs recently. You look at Meta. They, of course, went through some huge cost-cutting measures that included laying off a bunch of people. Elon Musk now, you know, obviously cut a lot of workers at Twitter when he took over at X, now cutting some Tesla workers as well. But Tesla's just in this mode where I think clearly they've come out of favor with investors and they're saying, hey, we need to cut costs. We need to do something. So now they're laying off more than 10% of its workforce stock. I don't even know if the stock's trading down on that headline, honestly, but it is down about 0.9%. So
it's down on that. The cars aren't selling, folks. The cars are struggling to sell here. Like I said, you know, driving by and looking at the lot that had no Teslas on it, full of Teslas. I mean, that's an issue. So the cars are not selling. Well, we already have those numbers. We got them a week and a half ago, and the stock got hit on it, but it didn't get that hard. So you have this, like, you know, people saying, okay, well, we're going to accept that, you know, maybe the investor base has got to be accepting now to a certain fact that the cars aren't selling as well as we'd hope. You know, they're still selling, but, you know, this the sales, you know, growth that we were experiencing with Tesla for so many years has slowed substantially and is not, you know, even potentially declining here. So, but there's so many other irons on the fire, the robo-taxi, the humanoids, you know, all the other stuff. I think that's what keeps an underneath demand for this stock and stops it from going down. Like people saying, why should it be valued, you know, at 50 times earnings when Ford's valued at 10 times earnings? Well, Ford don't have a lot of that other stuff cooking. You know, they don't have the full self-drive. You know, they're not nearly as far on a lot of this stuff. So Musk is still a long ways on a lot of these things. And that's why people are willing to pay a premium for this stock. Because if it was just your traditional car company right now, the stock would be a hell of a lot lower than it is. So all of that potential, the hope, you know, that eventually Teslas are just, you know, coming and picking us up and driving us. We don't have to call a taxi anymore. We're calling a robo-taxi. They'll eat Uber's lunch. They're going to have the humanoid business. They're going to have all this. I think some of that is true. And I think it's going to happen. So, you know, I'm even a buyer of Tesla. And I have a small piece, but not, you know, maybe. I'm very concerned that the car sales are slowing from where they were.
Yeah, I mean, and right now, that's still obviously by far the biggest part of the business. If Tesla spun off its, like, energy storage business, I would definitely be a buyer of that. I wish I could get exposure to that without the car side. Then, of course, like, also the self-driving, like you said, if that could spin off as its own, like, technology business, that'd be cool, too, because I do think they're far ahead of a lot of other companies, but I think that space will be crowded over time. But all right, let's make sure we've got time for all of the headlines in the last 3 minutes. You've got Apple, some bad news over the weekend regarding iPhone sales. Let me try to get that exact headline up here. And then we also, you know, on Friday, you had some follow through based on, you know, based on that AI headline from last week. Dennis, do you have the iPhone news?
It was
Apple's iPhone shipments dip 10% while overall market grows 7.8%. Samsung reclaims top spot, I guess, in the worldwide. So, I mean, here in the U.S., it's hard because, like, every single person has an iPhone seemingly. But, like, you look at the overall global market share, and it's like, oh, you know, Apple, it's not everyone that not everyone has iPhones. So,
yeah.
Just some global, like, weakening demand, it looks like, for iPhones overall. Not great news for Apple. Stock trading down about 0.5% on the day where the market's up.
Yeah, and again, we have this negative correlation. It seems like, you know, NVIDIA has a bad day, Apple has a good day. We know Apple was flying up, you know, last week on the news that, you know, they're going to get involved with the chips and the Macs are going to all have AI chips, and that's what really drove it for 2 days. It cools off a little bit here today. Do they buy the dip on Apple? I think so. I think they come in and buy the dips as you get to the lower 170s. I think you have a lot of buyers down there. Maybe people who were caught short thinking the thing was going to break down. It's not the case. You know, it's went the other way here. How'd you do? Did you get out of your calls?
Yes and no. I still had a few hanging on Friday, and I sold some of them when Apple was ripping in the morning. I held on to a few more that, you know, got decimated a few. So, like, I, like, at one point, well, let's say on Friday, I was up like $1,500 on that on the options I was holding. And I sold some near the top. And then, like, by the end of the day, I was up only like $600. So I got wiped out of like $900 with the value on them. But overall, I mean, a win's a win.
So yeah, fun.
It was like I was upset, but I was like, one Friday when Apple did rip up to its highs, which I don't even know like what it technically got up to. I want to say like 178 maybe. 178 almost on the dot. I was like, oh my God, like if I hadn't sold any yesterday, I'd be up, you know, 10 grand right now. And I was upset. And then Apple sold off and I was like, why didn't I sell any earlier?
There you go. That's what, like, I get too.
Yeah. So
it's like, psychological head game.
Yeah. I was like upset at myself on both sides, but at the end of the day, it's a win's a win. I made money on the trade. And I mean, it was I'll be the first to admit it was a lucky trade as much as it was a good trade. But hey, I mean, at the end of the day, I made money. That's what it's about. Real quick, we do have some news on Salesforce. Stock trading lower on rumors suggesting the company is in talks to buy Informatica. I mean, this dude Benioff loves to just acquire companies. Like, I feel like they're always acquiring someone, Salesforce is, and they've made some good acquisitions in the company's history. But the old trial balloon test, you know, you throw a rumor out there, see how the market responds. The market say, no, don't do it. Don't go and buy them. The market is trading down. Don't buy them.
What? I don't know if there's another headline here because it's down $9 on the potential of an acquisition here. I think this must
I think the reports were that like the talks were pretty like deep. You know, like there, it wasn't just like, hey, like we could be interested. It was like they were doing the whole like, you know, maybe the already banks were involved and this and that. So I don't know the full story here. But again, that's why the stock is trading lower. Salesforce down about 3% this morning. Looking at the chart here, definitely doesn't look like a great chart to me. Just kind of a little like toppy. But I think Salesforce, I mean, it's such a huge company that if there's any, you know, if it continues moving lower, I could be inclined to potentially buy some.
INFA not trading up on this news at all. So I guess this was maybe rumored or, you know, stock had been moving up for a few days here. And maybe the price isn't going to be as good as what they had hoped. You know, interesting when you see a takeout, you know, candidate there and it doesn't, you know, go up, you know, that's interesting too. And then Salesforce going down on it. I just say, I just don't have enough information here to make any trades on this. CRM down 9 points is surprising to me. I'm wondering if there's some other headline that's out there as well.
Potentially. Let me check real quick.
That's okay. I kind of took a quick look, so I didn't see anything jumping out at me, but just,
you
know. You
did have some price target, maintains, Needham, Piper Sandler.
I had taken a quick look before we started the show. I didn't see anything jumping out at me, but wow.
Got it.
DJT right. Really getting hit here now. Spinner saying the auditor quit.
Which one?
The DJT. It's down. We talked it earlier. It's down 16% here now. Spinner is saying the auditor quit. Was that the case? Because I didn't actually check. I don't even trade the stocks. I don't really look at the news. But yeah, it looks like, and not only that, we've got Files Prospectus relates to the issuance of to another 21.5 million shares. So we look like we got some dilution here going here too. So
never what you want. Never what you want.
No, dilution. There's just so many problems for longs here. We talked about this, you know, and eventually it was going down. We knew it was eventually going down. It was just a matter for the shorts whether it was going to go down fast enough to warrant that 700% you were paying to short the thing. You know, being long, like I said on the show last week, was it's borderline insanity. You know, just to be flat out long this thing. Well, people are supporting it, but I mean, it would, you know, the likelihood of this going down was very, very, very high. So, and it's continuing to go down, you know, does it, you know, have a bounce, a snapback eventually? Maybe, but this is something that's very scary to trade from the long side. Cause to Paul's point, there's no fundamentals to support this price.
Yeah. Again, it wasn't a matter of if it was going to come down. It was a matter of when, much it could run up before it did. I mean, that's kind of where, what we were looking at. But all right, 9:02 AM tomorrow, we will be doing T3 Tuesday. I don't know who exactly will be joining us. Maybe Red Dog again, maybe someone else from T3, but excited for that as well. Dennis, good to hang out with you this morning. We certainly missed Joel, but he will be back soon. Other than that, hope everyone has a great day. We've got live trading starting up right after this. Smash the like if you haven't already. Gary said he's not going to, so hopefully a few people out in the chat will make up for that and smash the like for us. But all right, guys. This stream will redirect you over to live trade, and we'll see you tomorrow morning.